Lance, thank you so much for joining us today on Galesburg Live.
Happy to be here.
Great to see you again. We're excited because you were a longtime guest with our friend Jim Lee.
Right, yep.
And since he retired a couple years ago, we've been lacking a little bit in this local ag voice, I guess.
You know.
And so we're excited to welcome a new feature here on WGIL coming up in the next week or so. On Saturday morning, somewhere between 6 and 6:30, where you're going to be talking about local ag.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I miss my conversations with Jim, and looking much forward to getting back on the radio and being able to talk to our local ag producers and also to, you know, maybe some of the non-ag folks that are listening in as well that are curious about what's going on in agriculture and issues and such. So it's something I've always enjoyed, educating people about agriculture in general, answering questions that farmers have. That's a big part of what I do in my career with Bayer. And I really am looking forward to it.
Yeah, right. And it's going to be kind of a short form thing, about 7-8 minutes. Because Orion Samuelson is retiring, isn't he? Is he?
I don't know. I
had heard that he's going to be retiring. So we're trying to find something to kind of replace some of that.
Well, I was going to say your short format would be good. My wife would tell you that 7 or 8 minutes of me is as much as anybody needs to have.
But is that enough to cover what we have to cover?
Well, you know what I mean? I think if it's going to be a weekly thing, when I came in and talked to Jim, I mean, usually that was just every other week. Maybe sometimes we'd separate it out. It didn't go year round. That was just kind of during the growing season.
Yeah.
So compared to what I've done in the past, 7 or 8 minutes every week sounds like a lot to me. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, I hope people love it. I hope I love it. I hope you love it. I hope it's, something that people, want more of. And if it grows from that, that's cool with me.
What do you think some of the local topics that farmers want to hear about?
Well, I think farmers are always, we're preoccupied with the weather and the impact it's having on the crop and how the crop's doing and what sort of pest problems are we dealing with, and whether it's insects or disease or just stresses of the weather. So, farmers are always, first and foremost interested in what's impacting the crop. And then, agriculture is a huge topic. It ranges all the way from production agriculture to export and trade and food production and employs a lot of people in the state, employs a lot of people in the country. It's, kind of both, there's the big business corporate side of ag, which not everybody likes. There's the, small independent farm family side of life, side of ag that everybody, loves. And so it's a pretty wide ranging topic, and there's just a lot of things that I think agricultural producers, we're all very proud of what we do as farmers, and it's something that that we enjoy, that we're passionate about, that I think not everybody understands why we like it.
That's right.
And why it's important to us. And I just think there's a lot of things to talk about.
And we're going to get into that later on this hour. But with this whole COVID-19 thing that hit, the pandemic, farming is such a relational industry and such a relational trade. It's about relationships. It's about that coffee shop sitting down and talking out things. And we haven't been able to do much of that, have we? Or maybe not. Maybe farmers aren't so concerned about it.
Well, I mean, there's relationships, but you have relationships with your family, with your neighbors, with your close circle of people. And, I don't know that any of that has really changed that much through this. At the same time, farmers are a pretty staunchly independent breed of people. And, I talk to my friends and colleagues and associates that, live in Chicago or live in New York or live in, major metropolitan areas. And we've seen the effects of what, the nation's going through, but it's more of an indirect effect on us in the ag community. Certainly at Bayer, I can feel, huge changes. I mean, we're not doing in-person meetings anymore. We didn't have field days and those sort of things, and we're doing everything virtually, and and such. But if you're a farmer on the farm, especially if you're a livestock producer, you know, you have to work every day. You have to work, you know, morning and night every day. Yeah. I mean, you just can't quit what you're doing. And so most farmers have continued, you know, through all of this. I mean, you know, the weirdest thing a farmer might have to do is put his mask on to go to Farm King. you know, but when they're at home on the farm working, I mean, really nothing's changed. I mean, yeah, you may not go to the local grain elevator and sit there and have coffee, or you might still do that. You know, and you might, you know, think twice about, well, do I really need to go into town to get this or that, what have you. But as far as what we do on the farm, we still have to plant a crop. We still have to take care of a crop. We still have to harvest a crop. And really none of that's changed.
Let's talk a little bit about you. I know we've talked about your background before. Maybe there's people out there who haven't had a chance to hear you before. But you grew up down in London Mills.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Well, actually, Lance and I grew up together. Went to school at
Spoon River Valley. You could tell people.
I could tell people. Right? Yes, but we'll let you. It's more fun to have you do that. But I've known Lance just about all my life, and your family farm down in London Mills.
Right. Yeah. Grew up oldest of four kids on a farm just at the very southern edge of Knox County, just north of London Mills, yeah. And grew up there. Went to kindergarten through senior year at Little Valley High School. Graduated from there, went to University of Illinois.
And a typical farm family, though. I mean, yeah. You guys were had ground there. Did you have livestock?
Yeah, we had grain, livestock. Yeah. And you know, my dad was not a big farmer, and so he oftentimes had off farm jobs to supplement the income. So yeah, when I was in high school, and my dad was, you know, working hard to survive the farm crisis of the 80s and save the farm, he was. He was a rural mail carrier. He worked nights in a grocery store, and he farmed.
Well, hardworking guy.
He had three jobs.
Yeah, that's right.
And we worked on the farm. Of the four kids, I was the one that had passion for farming, and you know, spent the most time on the farm. And the rest of them got drafted from time to time to do things. I was usually the one that was volunteering. Yeah. But we grew up. It's a great. You know, it's not always a easy life, but it's a great life, and it's a great place to raise a family, too. Yeah. I mean, my dad worked super hard. My mom worked super hard, but they were there all the time. So as a growing up on a farm, there's a lot of family time when you're together with your family. Yeah. And so that was nice. And, you know, having my mom was there every day.
Yeah.
And spoiled all of us as far as, you know. Did all the cooking, did all the cleaning, kind of the traditional image that people would have of the farm wife.
4-H and showing cattle, as you'd all.
That's
that
right.
Stuff.
We did 4-H, showed cattle. Pretty typical, not a whole lot different than a lot of farm kids would be today.
After high school, you went to U of I.
That's right. Went to U of I. I actually wanted to stay home and farm. And I know I've told this story before that, my dad and I about came to blows when I was a junior and senior in high school because he was bound and determined that, you know, I was not going to stay home on the farm and just, you know, work for him for free. He'd had a hard time getting through the 80s like a lot of farmers did. And farming had been hard on my dad. And, he wanted something different for me.
That's
he wanted something, you know, to him better for me.
Yeah.
A lot of farm kids, you know, feel pressure sometimes to come back to the farm and take over. I was just the opposite. I hungered for that, and I was getting pushed off the farm because he wanted me to do something else. So I went off to U of I and ended up getting my bachelor's there and graduated in 91 with a bachelor's, and job market was pitiful at that time, and didn't really find anything that tripped my trigger, so I ended up staying for a master's, and you know, I didn't really even want to go to college, and ended up with two degrees.
Yeah, right.
So I'm glad for that now. I mean, I was kind of bitter about it at the time. That wasn't what I wanted to be doing with my life. I was on a mission to get done with college as fast as I could. I mean, I took heavy class loads, and I didn't really enjoy the college experience. If a kid asked me today what I would do different, I would, you know, I'd have a little more fun in college, to be honest with you.
But you got that bachelor's in 3 years, so
I did. And you know, I had the master's done, you know, BS and master's in four and a half years total, and I was out of there and and wanted to get to work and have had a great career in ag since then, and really glad that I've got those 2 degrees. And it's kind of ironic. I didn't want to go to college because I wanted to be a farmer. And I would acknowledge today that if I hadn't gone to college, had this career, I wouldn't be a farmer today, because my off-farm employment, you know, made me financially able to start farming.
Sure.
And if you don't come from an existing, stable, solid, established farming family, I mean, you can't just go borrow $1 million and buy some ground and buy some equipment and start farming.
Right, right.
You have to have something to start from, or you have another source of income and you start small, and that's what I did.
Harvest is going hard and heavy with all this nice weather we've had. My gosh, they are just hitting it hard. In fact, you're getting ready. When we record this, at the time we're recording this, after we get done, you're heading out to the field yourself.
Yep, that's right. Whenever I can sneak away from my day job at Bear this time of year, or spring, or whenever, I like to be as involved as I can be in the farming operation.
Yeah,
I've got my wife does a lot of the farm work, and her family helps us a lot, and we work together with them, and between all of us, we find a way to get the job done.
That's right.
But whenever I can be there physically to help, I like to be.
How's harvest going for your customers and for
We got off to a little bit of a late start this year with harvest, not as late as last year. Last year was record late year, nothing like that. But we are a little bit behind the 5-year average as far as the amount of crop that's come out. Now this week, to your point, we're going to catch up a lot, because guys are just really rolling hard now. A lot of soybeans coming out, corn's continuing to dry down well in the field. And what made stuff slow at the start was we had some high moisture corn, and when you're harvesting corn that's 25, 26, 27% moisture and your market moisture is 15%, you have to dry that down. And that process of drying that grain down to where it's dry enough to sell or store takes a lot of time. And so the logistics of that really, really slow you down. But now that the corn moisture has come down, that'll go faster. Soybeans are, really at a perfect stage for harvest now. And, we're blessed with, amazingly, good fall weather. And, farmers are notoriously picky on the weather. I have landlords that tease me that you guys are never happy with the weather. It's either too wet, too cold, too hot, too dry, too something. And the kind of weather we're having right now is exactly what we always want at harvest time, because it's dry. The fields are dry. You can do whatever you want and really get in until you have a breakdown, get in a good day's work and get a lot of acres out.
Yeah, right. I'm a little surprised that you said that we're behind.
Yeah.
It seems early. I don't know why that is.
We're not horribly behind, but we are a little behind our 5 and 10 year average for getting far as progress on harvest.
How's yields looking this year? On average.
Yeah, yields have been a very pleasant surprise most people, myself included. I always think we're going to be able to raise a crop. I have a lot of confidence in the germplasm and technology that farmers are using to raise crops today, and the ability of our crops to withstand different challenges from Mother Nature is pretty phenomenal. But as dry as we were towards the tail end of summer, I really, have been pleased with a lot of the yields that I'm hearing from our customers and that I'm seeing on my own farm. Frankly, it's not going to be a record year by any stretch, but yields are good. This surprise rally we've had in prices late in the season, pre-harvest, very, very odd to have prices going up as we're going into harvest. For those, unlike myself, who hadn't already sold all their crop, that will be a nice little bonus on top of the good yields.
What's the what's responsible for this rally?
I think some of it, some of the parts of the country that don't have as good of crops, the big wind event in Iowa damaged a lot of crops. So that kind of started off. And then exports started picking up, and so we had some weather challenges. Exports picked up. Demand's been really strong. There's always emotion that gets into a market, and it has shocked me, frankly. I'm not a marketing expert. If you want me to give you marketing advice, just ask what I did and then do the opposite of that would generally be the best advice I could give someone. But, I don't think anybody was anticipating this pre-harvest rally that we've had. So that'll be nice.
Lance Tarchione is a technical agronomist with Bayer, and he's going to be featured on a Saturday morning program that we're going to start here soon, talking about local ag. And I guess we'll jump into this. How's the state of agriculture right now, just in general? Is it positive? Is it concerning? Questions? What, you know? Yeah.
I think it's all the above, Chris. Really, there's lots of things to be positive about. I mean, farmers are eternally optimistic. You know, right. Every year is going to be better. Every year, I'm going to try to raise the best crop I've ever raised. This year might have kicked me in the teeth, but next year is going to be better. Sure. And so, so farmers are very resilient people, very independent people.
Yeah.
Want to be profitable on their own, without, government intervention in a lot of cases. And so, exports are big for farmers. Environmental issues can be big for farmers. Freedom to operate issues can be big for farmers. I mean, farmers want to, they want to have the freedom to manage their land and manage their farm,
sure.
The way they feel is best without a lot of intervention. So I would say in general, agriculture has a bright future from a big picture standpoint. I mean, there's what, 8-9 billion people in the world today, mm-hmm. and that number's probably going to continue to increase. And, food production would be a good business to be in.
That's right.
If that's the case.
Did you watch the vice presidential debate?
To be honest with you, I did not.
Okay.
I watched the first presidential debate, which was a little painful.
Oh,
gotta
my
say.
Gosh, no kidding.
And to be honest, what that debate solidified for me was that everybody's already made up their mind.
Yeah,
and anybody who says they haven't, I'm not sure I believe them.
Well, the reason I bring up the vice president is because Kamala Harris brought up the whole, there's how many farmers, million farms closed down since President Trump's been in, office. So she really hit on that.
Yeah. I don't know where those statistics come from. And
I guess I just, when we talk about the election coming up, does it mean a lot for agriculture of what's going to happen here? If Biden and Harris, if that ticket wins, how's that going to affect?
Well, it depends on what aspect of farming you want to look at. I mean, you can look at trade, you can look at subsidies, you can look at general farm policy, you can look at environmental policy. So as a rule, farmers tend to lean conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers tend to be concerned about, over-regulation.
Yeah.
Farmers tend to be very concerned about tax policy. They're independent businessmen. So I would say that, not every farmer is a conservative, but they do tend to lean that way.
Sure.
I think there's, depending on your, perspective of what would be good for the country, I think farmers as a general rule are patriotic, love their country kind of people, want to see what's good for America is good for farming, mm-hmm. kind of mentality. And so, I can't speak for every farmer, but, I think there's certainly things that would change with a shift in power.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those short term could be positive for ag. Some of those short term could be, detrimental to ag. Farmers tend to be more long term thinking.
Sure.
Farmers been in the family for 100 years they want it to be in the family for another 100 years, and you got to get through next year to be here for 100 years. But they tend to look at what's best for the long term.
We talked about big ag. It doesn't get much bigger than Bayer,
right? Yeah.
Took over Monsanto.
Yeah, bought out Monsanto.
Bought out Monsanto.
That's right.
And so tell me a little bit about Bayer.
Yeah. So Bayer's a German corporation and been around for long time, still have different divisions in their business. Monsanto had gotten out of everything but their ag business. So yeah. Monsanto used to have a pharmaceutical business, and Monsanto used to have an industrial business, and they used to have the Monsanto wear dated carpet and,
oh, yeah.
and things, fibers sure. and such. So, and over the years, they had decided to focus 100% on ag.
Hmm.
Well, Bayer still has three divisions. They got a pharma division, they got an ag division, they got a consumer health division. You know, there's a lot of, Bayer that's, in addition to just the ag part
yeah.
of Bayer. So, much, much, much bigger company. I mean, farmers, some farmers always thought Monsanto was too big. And yeah. Monsanto was actually a very small company relative to, DuPont and Syngenta and BASF and Bayer and some of the other big players in ag. So
yeah.
there's, continues to be consolidation in a lot of different industries, and ag is one of them. So, yeah, as part of Bayer now, I'm in a much larger company. With a bigger product portfolio, more ability to invest in R&D than even Monsanto could do. So it's, it's definitely different. It's exciting
yeah.
and, nice to have my favorite part is we do have a much, much broader portfolio of products mm-hmm. to offer to customers than
yeah.
we could as Monsanto. Monsanto had really skinnied down their offering to where they still had some older herbicides, but they were primarily a seeds and traits business.
Yeah.
Bayer's, got all the seeds and traits technology that came from Monsanto, has some of the chemistry that came from Monsanto, but then had a very deep portfolio of their own of herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, seed mm-hmm. treatments, and things that Monsanto really didn't have. And so it's really nice to be able to have a deeper portfolio of products that, more opportunities to help farmers.
Absolutely. Lance Tarchione is a technical agronomist with Bayer. What is the big thing that you're with harvest going on and you're seeing the results of? What's that new tech that they put in this year that you're starting to see the results of that you're excited about? At harvest time,
well,
with Bayer.
I think there's tremendous amount of more so than we've had in several years. Uncertainty on the part of the grower is how they're going to manage weeds and soybeans
yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the future. And so, our new XtendFlex product that just got EU approval in
yeah.
the last couple weeks and will be commercially available for 21. There's a lot of new soybean herbicide systems that are coming out. So when Roundup Ready was launched in 1996, 1997,
yeah.
pretty close to the earlier days of my career, for about 25 years, it was a foregone conclusion that, Roundup was going to be the basis of, soybean weed control.
Yeah.
And that has really changed in the past few years. So it's a very interesting dynamic time. And there's a lot of, a lot of things that are changing
yeah.
in soybeans as far as what growers are going to do next year for weed control. So there's, that's probably the biggest topic right now with
because
farmers.
Because Roundup was going away, right? I mean, it was becoming – Roundup was not effective, right?
It's not going away.
Being
it's still the number one herbicide in the world as
okay.
far as, how much of it's used. But there are an increasing number of weed species that have developed resistance
yeah,
to it.
Right, right.
So it still controls 200 and some weeds,
yeah.
but it controls about 25 less weeds than it used to.
Oh, right.
And some of those weeds are pretty important to us. So
yeah.
you haven't, we don't really use less of it because it still does
okay.
so many good things for us, but
okay.
you have to use other things with it
okay.
To get the level of weed control that you're looking
what
for.
What about dicamba? There
yeah.
was the big thing. It, you can't use dicamba anymore. Is that right?
Yes and no.
yeah.
There were three dicamba products that were designed to use over the dicamba resistant soybeans.
Okay, right? Gotcha.
And soybeans. Those three products, the labels were vacated back in the summer by the Ninth Circuit Court decision.
And that means?
And that meant for the remainder of this year,
yeah.
those products were not legal to be used on soybeans. You can still use dicamba in corn.
Okay.
You can still use dicamba in your yard.
Oh.
You can still use dicamba in your pasture.
Hmm.
You can even still use dicamba on a soybean field before you plant the soybeans.
Wow.
So it's dicamba didn't go away, and dicamba is
okay.
not going to go away.
I see.
But certain uses of it,
gotcha.
Which are pretty important,
yeah.
temporarily went away.
Yeah.
Highly likely that they will be back for next year. There's there's some debate about that. But you know, we anticipate within, you know, by this fall sometime we'll have those products re-registered so that those uses will come back and be an option for 2021 for producers. So, dicamba has been kind of a lightning rod. You know, a lot of controversy surrounding it. It's an old product. It's been around since the 60s.
Yeah.
Even earlier than that. And it's, you know, been used in corn for years and years and years. About 4 years ago, soybeans that were resistant to that product became available. So farmers could start to use it for weed control in soybeans. Mm-hmm. And so we've been using it in new ways, using more of it than we did prior to those soybeans coming out. And that's some of what has spurred some of the controversy.
So you're having some interesting conversations with growers.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
For a lot of misconception, a lot of misinformation that people may have, rumors
Guys tend to growers tend to use products that they trust.
Yeah.
Use products that they've had success with. Use products that are effective. They need to be affordable. They need to be easy to use. There's lots of things guys like about when they're deciding what herbicide program they're going to use. And, you know, for years and years and years and years, everything was just kind of based around Roundup.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that has changed in recent years. There's competing products. Sometimes to use a different herbicide program, you have to buy a different kind of seed. And so that gets into that relationship aspect of it. You've been buying seed from the same guy for 15 years. If you decide you're going to switch to a different herbicide program that same seed seller can't provide to you, that means you're going to have to, you know, sever that relationship possibly. Yeah. And that's hard for people.
And with the whole weed thing, if you can control more weeds, that means more plants, more beans per pod, more money, more beans per acre, more money.
That would be
more bushels per acre. Yeah.
Yeah. The reason we're controlling weeds is really twofold. You need to protect the crop from the weeds so that you can produce the best crop possible.
Yeah.
There's also an aesthetic point to it.
I was going to get into that.
And I don't know that people really fully understand this. And sometimes farmers are a little embarrassed to be honest about this, but how that field looks, in some cases, is more important than how it yields.
That's right.
We're honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
So just like as you travel around town, you notice who's got the really good-looking yards.
Yeah, that's right.
When you're driving out in the countryside, you notice who's got the really good-looking fields.
Yeah.
And it's hard, especially with soybeans. Soybeans being a shorter crop, a weedy cornfield, sometimes you really can't tell how weedy it is because the corn's tall enough to hide it.
Yeah.
Most weeds are taller than soybeans. So if you don't do a good job controlling weeds in your soybeans, you and everybody else that drives by your field is going to know that.
Lance, I'm so glad you brought that up. My grandma and I, she's 90 years old, got 80 acres down there in Maquon. When we're driving around, she'll say, "Well, look at that field. They must not know what they're doing." It's a source, but then again, she looks at her field and goes, "Look at my beans," even though she's renting it.
Yeah,
look at my beans out there, nice and clean. It's a source of pride.
It is very much a source of pride, and you know, farmers are, you know, we're human, we're competitive, we have pride, we have vanity, and there's been farms that have been lost by farmers or gained by farmers from, you know, someone like your grandma.
Yeah.
You know, if she drives by her field someday and realizes, boy, it's not as clean as the neighbor's field, you know, somebody might have some explaining to do.
That's right. And when it comes to re-upping that lease,
that's right.
we may have to.
So it's,
you have to be good stewards of the land.
That's right. You need to be profitable. You want to raise a good crop. You don't want to spend money unnecessarily. You want to be a good steward of the land, and you want to be proud of how your fields look.
That's right.
And keeping soybeans clean is a challenge.
Are you get make you uptight and anxious when you see too many weeds out there in your soybeans?
Not to the extent of some people.
Sure.
And my wife gets frustrated with this. There's certain things that I'm really particular about.
Yeah.
And other things that she wishes I was more particular about that I'm not.
That's right.
So I think everybody's got that thing that, you know, for some people it's, you know, how's their vehicle look, or you know, how's their yard look, or how clean is their house?
Sure.
And for a lot of farmers, it's How good's their weed control?
How good's the weed control? Well, Lance, we're running out of time here. So looking forward to hearing you on Saturday mornings. Again, between 6 and 6:30 and a little more local ag talk. So it's great to have you back with us on Galesburg Live, and hope to feature you again soon.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Be careful out there.
I'll do that. You too.